Thank you, Val. Thank you for joining us today. And the goal of this presentation is to give you an update on the New England Aquaventus One project. As part of that, I'm going to talk about the center, the composite center at the University of Maine a bit. I'm going to talk about offshore wind in general around the world, what is going on right now, and how does this project compare to other projects around the world. And then we're going to talk about how we got to our design. We started with 150 scale models, then we went to 1/8 scale models. We'll talk about those, and then we'll end with this with the Aquaventus project, what we're doing right now on that project. The New England Aquaventus project one is a two turbine, each is a 6 megawatt unit, as you see in this photograph. The units are off the coast of Monhegan, Maine, to be deployed in that location. The hulls are made out of concrete. They float, and each hull is moored to the seabed with 3 mooring lines. The University of Maine Composite Center, where I work, is shown right here in the photo. It was founded by the National Science Foundation in 1996. Today we have 180 people who work in the center, and we do research and development projects for companies from across the world, bringing advanced materials into construction. Our expertise is how to build structures in innovative manners using innovative materials. And that's why we're involved in the offshore wind project. We have about 100,000 square foot lab, and we've had over 1,700 students who have been funded in our lab from 35 different majors at UMaine over the last 20 years. This slide shows you some of our clients and partners around the world. As I said, we do research and development with companies from across the world and develop joint technologies related to advanced materials and structures, of course, offshore wind being one of them. This is an example of facilities we've added to the laboratory recently. This is an ocean engineering basin that was added. We call it the W Square Basin. It was dedicated a couple of months ago. It's about a $14 million facility, very unique, where we can test offshore structures. And the facility is a basin that has a moving floor, wave generation capacity, but also wind generation capacity. What's unique about it, it's a wind tunnel over a wave basin. And there are wind tunnels out there, wave basins out there, but so far nobody's put a high-quality wind tunnel over a wave basin, and that's what this facility allows us to do. As you see here, the basin floor can move up and down to change water depth as you test structures. So this particular facility is able to test offshore wind structures, vessels for offshore wind, offshore wind applications, as well as other types of ocean energy devices, such as tidal devices or wave devices. The typically, most of the testing we do in this basin is at 150 scale, which means that everything we do in there is typically a 150 geometric scale of a larger system. This video here shows you how the wind tunnel or the wind machine rotates around the laboratory, allowing us to apply winds from different directions. At the 150 scale, we're able to apply winds that exceed, at that scale, 200 mile per hour equivalent winds, and then waves that exceed 100 feet of height, which is over 500 year waves in the Gulf of Maine and in most places in the U.S. Going back to the project off Monhegan Island, the one thing that's been positive is recently the DOE announced that they will invest an additional $3.7 million in our project. That investment will be coming soon. It's not here yet. And that investment will allow us to spend a year to complete the design on the project and, as Val said, reach the point where we have financial close. So these activities are strictly design activities, permitting activities, environmental testing activities, and so forth that will be completed over the next year of the project. Location-wise, the New England Aquaventus One is located south of Monhegan Island. This is a state of Maine, and Monhegan Island is about 12 miles away from shore, depending where you measure from. The island, the test site that the university currently has access to under a Maine law, is within 3 miles of the island, which means that's the blue line that you see right here. That's a 3-mile line from the island. which means the project is in state waters. So permitting of the project goes through the state versus the Bureau of Ocean Energy Management, and that allows us to speed the permitting process because we're all dealing locally with local local entities. The test site is 2 miles by 1 mile, and the two hulls would be on the test site, within that test site located. Again, let's talk about offshore wind in general in the U.S. Depending on how you calculate it, there's nearly 4,000 gigawatts of offshore wind capacity within 50 miles of the shore. And as you look on the east coast of the U.S., when you travel north, the wind gets to be better. So when you get to the Gulf of Maine, we have some of the better winds on the east coast of the United States, and that's one reason we're interested to demonstrate technologies in that area. And more than half of the offshore wind capacity off the U.S. coast is in water depth that exceeds 60 meters, which means that we can't use cost-effectively bottom-fixed foundations for those units. That's why we'd like to go to floating foundations. Offshore wind, for those of you not familiar with offshore wind started in Europe. The first offshore wind farm was built in Europe in 1991. And the majority of the farms built in Europe use the monopile design. Basically, they're typically relatively shallower waters. You drive steel piles into the seabed, typically 15, 20-foot diameter pile driven into the seabed. Then a jack-up barge will come in and lift the tower sections and the turbine and the cell. And when you go to deeper waters, you can use jacket structures, or but it gets to be more expensive to go to deeper waters in that 30 to 50-meter range. Beyond 50 meters, you can float the turbine, which means you can pre-assemble the whole unit dockside and tow it out. But there are no commercial floating wind farms anywhere in the world today. And that's one reason this is a pilot project, is to demonstrate floating technologies. Looking at where the world is today, this is where Europe is today. There's close to 8 gigawatts of offshore wind capacity in Europe. Actually, globally, as of last year, the latest data we have, there's about 12 gigawatts of offshore wind installed across the world today. Last year, there was 3,700 megawatts of offshore wind installed throughout the world. The majority of what was turned on last year was actually in Germany. Germany was able to turn on and activate to the grid about 65% of that 3,700 megawatts. So we've been at it building offshore wind farms for a long time in Europe. There's a lot of information about its impact on the environment, how to install cables, what they mean. So the good news is in the U.S. we have a lot of a big database to rely on in terms of helping us make the right decisions, both environmentally and from an economics viewpoint, and the types of structures we put out there. This slide is from the European Wind Energy Association, and it's a good slide because it shows you the kinds of structures that have been built out there. As I said, there's over 8 gigawatts of offshore wind in Europe today, the majority of them in the North Sea. And these are the types of structures that are used to hold up the turbines offshore. The majority of them are monopiles. So 91% of all that's been installed in Europe are monopile foundations. Steel piles, again, driven into the seabed. The second most common type of structure built in deeper water is a jacket structure. It looks like a lattice structure, as you see here, and the tower's placed on top. And then there's been also some tripod structures used in Europe, but they were too expensive, and there's not as many of them being used right now. If you go over 50 meters of depth, 55 to 60 meters, it becomes it's not economical to go ahead and use these types of structures. So you'd have to float the structures. In terms of the average size of a connected wind farm in Europe that was connected in 2014, the average size was 368 megawatts. So the sizes of these farms are getting bigger and bigger that are being placed out there. And the other thing that's really important is the size of the turbines are getting bigger and bigger as well. The size of the turbines today, we have turbines in the 8-megawatt range. They're available today. These are very big machines, over 500-foot rotor diameters. And what everybody agrees in this industry is the bigger you make the turbines, the more cost-effective the farms are. And that's the direction that the industry is going in right now. Moving on to show you some pictures of what's going on in Europe. These are examples of the monopile foundations that are placed in Europe today. So typically what you would do is you would take a steel pile, as you see in this picture, typically a jack-up barge, and you basically pound the steel pile into the seabed. Again, we're talking 15 to 20-foot diameter sections, 2 to 1.5-inch thick steel walls. Once you're done with that, then you come in and put a transition section that allows you to shrink the diameter from the diameter of the pile to the diameter of the tower. That's a section in yellow that you see in here. And then above that, you assemble the tower, the turbine, and the blades. A lot of these units right now that are being put out there are over 100 meter rotor hub height from the water level to the hub. Again, 6 megawatt machines being installed as we speak, 7 and 8 megawatt machines coming around the corner right now. The disadvantage of doing it this way is it costs a lot, because these jack-up barges will cost you $200,000 to $300,000 a day to rent, whether you use it or you don't. But there's limited numbers of these barges, so the use of the cranes offshore is very expensive. Logistics are expensive. So the idea is, can you reduce the cost by actually pre-assembling these units and floating them down to site and mooring them to the seabed? And that's the work we've been doing in Maine for a number of years right now. This is an example of a project in Europe. It's a Thornton Bank project, 300 megawatt in Belgium. It has 55 megawatt repower turbines. They use 6 gravity foundations and 44 jacket foundations. That's what the jackets look like. There's 44 of them. The gravity foundations have been used, but not very much. Basically, they're a very big, heavy concrete foundation that sits on the seabed. Because it's so heavy, it provides the overturning moment capacity so the unit doesn't tip over. However, the logistics of building that, getting it out there and putting it into the seabed is very expensive, so people aren't using as many of these units. That's how you build them. You see the size of the facilities required to build these jackets, these gravity foundations. That's how you install the gravity foundations. You have to level off the seabed with heavy equipment. Again, showing you that because doing this kind of work is very expensive, because you're doing offshore work, and the more you can reduce the offshore work you do by using, say, a floating foundation and doing it out there, the more potentially you can reduce costs. This is how the jacket foundations are placed. That's 8% of the market in Europe today. They've been placed between 25 and 50 meter water depth. Notice that you have to lift these units with a barge, place them into the seabed. At the seabed, actually, there's typically a fixture or connector that requires you need to use, and you can see what it looks like. It's an anchor for a jacket that you drive piles in. And allows you to connect the jackets to. And then all that, those operations require costs. You have to install the foundation, you have to bring in the jacket, and you have to assemble the tower and turbine above. And I say that is if you can avoid doing all that by prefabricating the hull and taking it out there, you might pay a little bit more for the hull because it has to float, but you can make up for it potentially by reducing the cost of mobilizing all this equipment offshore. This is an example of a tripod foundation. It's less than 1% in the market in Europe today. Again, used in that 30 to 60 meter water depth. Again, you have to mobilize all this equipment, assemble it offshore, and that drives costs up. And actually, there's very few of these, again, being planned or built right now because of the cost. In terms of if you're not familiar with how these farms are connected to the grid, that's a very well-known technology. Again, as I said, there's over 8,000 megawatts of units in Europe today and 12,000 megawatts in the world. Just alone in the state of Maine, we have a number of undersea cables that connect our islands to the mainland. Over 50 of these cables are out there right now. We've been operating them for over 30 years. So we know what it takes to install them. We know the impact of these cables on the environment. So there's no difference between these cables that we are using here for offshore wind farms and the cables that we use to connect islands to the mainland in the state of Maine. But again, it's important that we do all the proper environmental work and ecological work to ensure that the cable route protects the environment, yet at the same time serves the purpose of the project. So this is an example of a Thornton Bank in Belgium showing how a 50 turbine farm is connected to the grid. And what they have is they have 50 turbines right here where there's cables from each one of these turbines, electrical cables, that are collected to a collection point, to a 33 kV collection grid. There's an offshore transformer station with 250 kV power that reduces the export cable losses by jacking up the voltage from 33 kV to 150 kV. And then there's two export cables. In this farm, because they had 50 turbines, they put two cables out just in case if you lose one cable, you still have some power through the other cable. And in this case, the cable is 40 kilometers long. And then when you get to shore, they use horizontal directional drilling under the coast to bring the cable to shore, so you minimize the impact on the coastline. So this is an example of how people have done this in Europe, in case you're not familiar with how the cables are installed.